This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, as we welcome you in a Tuesday. Hope you're doing well. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Amal Shaw, the big guy, Dustin Sweetelson, live downtown Las Vegas at the D, right there, Bar Canada. And coming up in just a bit, one of you tweeted at Dustin Sweetelson, the big guy. One of you told him what he should go for Halloween this year, and it's a freaking 10 out of 10. We'll get to that in just a bit. Evan Washburn is going to join Jensen Lewis and Tim Jenkins in trifecta of great guests by the big guy last night. Shout to John Goulet, Femi, and Mr. Ross, because the Cowboys got it done, did just enough, 20-17. This was supposed to be offense and an explosion. That total actually came down from 50.5 down to 49.5 by the time it closed. But those two early scores here in Los Angeles with the Chargers hitting first and the Cowboys answering with that nice little run from Dak looked at 7-7 like we were going to go well over that 49.5. You see it 20-17, so a dead nut under in prime time again. And really the game was chaos, boys. You know, just a maddening mix of mistakes and punts, of which there were 9, penalties, of which there were 20, turnovers on downs in the red zone, failures in the red zones, drops, just an ugly game. You know, again, we talked the Donk Bowl with Mike McCarthy and Brandon Staley, who you'll hear from in just a bit. The Cowboys, I mentioned, did just enough. And this game came down to, boys, the two drives to finish up the game. The Cowboys took 5 minutes, drove it down, kicked the field goal, so it's 20-17. And then they give the Chargers the ball back with 2.5 minutes to play. And Justin Herbert threw a pick, which is not a surprise. This is what he's been doing since 2020 in the fourth quarter with a lead. As a matter of fact, he's thrown more picks in the fourth quarter since he's entered the league than anybody in one-score games. The final two plays, Micah Parsons with the pressure and the sack, and then Micah Parsons with the pressure and the Cowboys with the pressure and the pick. That's really what it comes down to. It was a mess. It felt so disjointed and constant. Was there a point at any point, Amal, where it felt like there was just a clean string of 3 plays that were together where you didn't look in the right-hand corner of your screen and see that yellow pop up with flag? It was ugly.
Hey, to your point, 20 penalties, 164 total yards by both of these teams combined from the laundry. And you mentioned it, the inconsistency. Let's start from the Chargers' perspective. I thought Justin Herbert played arguably one of his worst games as a Charger. Inconsistent. Now, you could sit there and say some of the pass protections broke down, but they didn't have a sack until the second to last play of the game for the Chargers offense. So they did a decent job of keeping him up. And then I'll tell you another thing that bothers me, Patrick. If you remember in the last sequence, there was an offsides on Parsons. It becomes 1st and 5, and then Herbert scrambles. Listen, if these quarterbacks are going to get paid $40 million, put your head in there. Go get a first down. It's amazing to me how quickly quarterbacks are looking to get into the slide or afraid to take a hit. This is just part of the game. But more importantly, I thought the Chargers really looked just disjointed throughout this football game, inconsistent from an offensive standpoint. Defense, what was it, 3rd and 19? Not one, but 2 holding calls on the play. I mean, guys, come on. Where are you holding the receiver until they get at least 15 yards down the field? What are you worried about in that sequence? This Chargers team completely out of it. I love what you and Dustin said yesterday, the Donk Bowl. Some of the coaching decisions and overwhelming just decision-making left a lot to be desired by both teams. And one final point on Dallas, when they took the lead on the final field goal by Aubrey, it was 3rd down and 8 with 2 minutes to go. Guys, if Pollard was open, that's a pass Dak Prescott's got to make. But more importantly, if you're Dallas, you pick up 9 yards on a 3rd down and 8, the game's over. You're taking 3 knees, you're kicking a field goal, and the Chargers have no chance to get the football.
Amal Shaw, thank you. The big guy, Dustin Sweetelson, in a feisty mood today. I'll tell you what it did for us, boys, as we continue to ride our $1,000 free roll to the Super Bowl. Hooday! With the Cincinnati Bengals, we just cleared out another AFC challenger. Coming into the season, the Chargers were lit. Now, 2 and 3, the Chargers are gone. I mean, Brandon Staley is a donk, and we can get into it. We've got a clip we're going to play for him, but we can just eliminate the Chargers from the AFC. It's just starting to open up like traffic clearing on the expressway for our Cincinnati Bengals as we drive listening to, let's see, what would Amal Shaw listen to? He would listen to some John Denver.
3 Doors Down.
What? Yeah, maybe a little Creed. I don't know, maybe a little Creed.
He nailed it with the first one.
John Denver, yes. Take me home, country roads. Dak, let's be fair. First off, the Chargers, big guy. They couldn't run the ball. 22 carries, I wrote down, 53 yards, 2.3 per carry. Eckler came back. He didn't do anything. 6 targets through the air. Dak was really good. And, you know, I told you, I thought the San Francisco game was a bit of an anomaly. I thought the play calling yesterday was a little bit more innovative. I thought they stretched the field a little bit. McCarthy mixed it up a little bit more. Dak, who threw for 272 boys in the touchdown, that beautiful read on the read run option where he took the where ran it in. That was gorgeous. It looked like the back had the ball. And then how about the bomb that he hit? That was one of the more beautiful throws. Who dropped that over the middle where he got yanked, but it was still a perfect
Michael
throw
Gallup,
from Dak.
Wasn't
who
that
was
Gallup?
That?
I think it was Gallup.
Was it Michael Gallup that dropped the ball? It was perfect placement from Dak Prescott, or he would have went well over 300 yards, ran for 40 yards in the touchdown. CeeDee Lamb, who was bitching after the San Francisco game, he goes 7 catches for 117. So if you're a Cowboys fan, and we have plenty of them, big guy, you got to be happy because it starts with your defense, and they force turnovers. They forced takeaways on downs as well, in the red zone as well, kind of tightened up. And Pollard, really the play of the game was that 3rd and 11, boys, where Dak got out of trouble, threw the ball to Pollard, who's explosive. He goes 60 yards. Also kind of getting Brandon Cooks in the mix, Dustin. I think if you're a Cowboys fan, the penalties are going to piss you off. Mike McCarthy is still your head coach. That's an issue. But you go to the bye at 4-2, having one on the road, and Dak looking good.
Yeah, and despite the run not working, like I don't like Mike McCarthy, but I do think kind of the principles he wants to implement here actually play to Dak's strengths. Dak's strengths were when he was at his best, when he was making a lot of his passes off of play action. Now, the run wasn't working last night, so they weren't able to do that as well, and Dak had to just go and throw, and he had a really nice day. The thing that was interesting at the end was the way the defense stepped up when it needed to and get those key sacks late on Herbert. I think that's something that's huge for this team, especially if they have a lead late in playoff games. When those pass rushers can just pin their ears back and go get the quarterback, that's going to be massive to stop teams from coming back against them. On the other side, I don't know who I hate more. Do I hate Brandon Staley or do I hate myself more? Because I am never betting on him again. You can't bet on the Chargers. That dude is sackless. Somehow, he's always on the wrong side of a fourth down decision. Whether he goes for it, he's wrong. Whether he punts it or kicks it, he's wrong. That guy is never on the right side of a decision. I cannot wait to see what Ben Johnson does with Justin Herbert next year.
Oof. I like that call. I like that call.
Yeah. I mean, he is. That's an interesting way of putting it. 14 points. Amal, you mentioned that Herbert. Good job, big guy. You mentioned Herbert. I agree with you. There was a throw to Keenan Allen. And by the way, how about 84.5 on the receiving prop? 85 yards for Keenan Allen.
He made you sweat that one.
Fellas, if Herbert was even kind of accurate last night, Allen goes for what? 160 yards?
Oh, yeah.
The play Patrick's talking about, Keenan Allen on the left side of the field is wide open.
Correct.
And at least finally Troy Aikman's got some stones clean. I can't believe he missed the throw. So, I mean, this is a play Justin Herbert's got to make every day of the week.
He was so bad. I still don't – you can't fire a quarterback, but I still don't know who's worse, Staley or Herbert.
Come on now. Let's just pump the brakes a little bit. 14 points. And you know what else? They didn't capitalize. Special teams created – a short field two different times for the Chargers, and they just couldn't get it done. I thought the play call on one of the fourth downs and goals ago was gross. You know, Kellen Moore. How about this? We continuously killed, and I'll point the finger at me because I think I was crushing them for getting rid of Moore. I thought the play calling was better on the Cowboys side last night. I thought it was a little bit more wide open and innovative than what I saw from Kellen Moore.
I tend to agree with you. I didn't like that decision on fourth down and very short to throw the football. I'm just a big proponent of 4th and 1 or less. You've got to run the ball. You've got a 6'5" quarterback. Look, he's got to go up under center and just push that ball. You know, Drew Brees used to be the best at it at the goal line. Just put that ball over the front of the goal line. Herbert's got to do something like that. I thought this was a real missed opportunity for the LA Chargers in this one. By the way, I like what Patrick said as he said, he goes, we've eliminated the Chargers. I was going through my head, guys. How many teams are we competing with right now? How many do you have on your list?
I think it's pretty much the Detroit Lions and the Cincinnati Bengals. Nobody else exists. Which brings me to something I didn't tell either of you today. I do have a project for us coming up later in the show. Here's what we're going to do. We've never done a Sharp Money Power Ranking. So we're going to have a snake draft today, the three of us. But we're going to start from the bottom up.
Ooh.
You understand what I'm
saying?
We're
going to work our way front to back.
We're going to go power rankings. We're going to do our power rankings today, but we're going to go snake draft bottom up. So we're going to start with the worst team, and we're going to finish, obviously, with the Detroit Lions. Let's hear from – take it easy, everybody. Let's hear from donk number one. What am I supposed to do? This is Mike McCarthy. What do you tell the team after the big win?
I kind of just reiterated what we talked about today in the team meeting. Didn't say much. You know, we felt like we've done enough talking, a lot of talking this week, you know. So they've been quiet. They worked hard. You know, did a good job. I mean, this was a bumpy night. You know, I mean, 20 penalties and the up and down this. But, you know, I just love their resilience and fight. And, you know, we came right on top.
Up and down this. Look. And I just want a Hall of Fame tweet. Somebody sent at Dustin Sweetelson this tweet as we go to break. Now, again, oftentimes Twitter can be a cesspool, but here's where it gives you hope for humanity. Somebody said that if Dustin Sweetelson dyed his hair gray, got a Cowboys hat, he'd look like, for Halloween, Mike McCarthy. That's not terrible! Come on, big guy.
Chris
Smile
Hartman.
A little bit.
Chris Hartman is his name, and it was a fantastic tweet.
He said that Dustin Sweetelson could go as Mike McCarthy for Halloween, grab a Cowboys hat with the star and a little gray hair, and boom, what am I supposed to do?
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. You can download the DraftKings app and use the promo code SHARP when you sign up. Of course, DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. We got you back. We got plenty to do. Evan Washburn is going to join us, CBS Sports. Jensen Lewis, we've got Game 2 NLCS coming up tonight. So looking forward to talking to Jensen. Tim Jenkins, quarterback trainer, to join as well. But as we welcome you back here on Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, we're going to welcome in Evan Washburn, of course, CBS Sports reporter and host, does a great job on the CBS crew with Ian Eagle and Charles Davis, three gentlemen, I should say. Evan Washburn on Twitter. And as we say hi to Evan, hi, Evan, thank you for joining us. You were at Cincinnati over the weekend. You've got Bills Patriots coming up this week. That Seahawks Bengals game was interesting because it started like it was going to be a shootout, and then both offenses kind of bogged down.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a real, kind of exactly what we were thinking when we got in the car afterwards. Man, we were all set for something that was going to be in the 30s, and then it became true AFC North football and maybe some NFC West football in there as well. So it was an interesting game. It was an entertaining game in the sense that you felt like at any moment this was going to be the play that was going to decide it.
Evan, you were close there on the sideline. What is your assessment of Joe Burrow's health? And I'm not saying from a medical standpoint, but your gut feeling, because he seemed like he was errant on so many throws that you would normally not see him miss on.
Agreed, especially in the second half. And I think, one, that's a product of Seattle's secondary. They look to have, I mean, I don't want to say they've rebuilt the Legion of Boom because they still got a ways to go to do that. But, man, they have the components to do so. Reek Woolen is special. His length is awesome. His ability to move at that size does remind you a little bit of Richard Sherman. They hit a home run in Witherspoon. He's everything you would want in a nickel corner, and he can do some other things as well. Trey Brown had the interception. So I think part of that is a product of what Seattle does to you defensively. But I think Joe Burrow, look, he's back to some degree because you saw it against Arizona. You saw it in the first drive and in portions of the first half against Seattle. But it's still a process for a guy who, for basically the last month and a half, outside of the last couple of weeks, has been extremely impacted by a serious calf injury.
Evan Washburn here, joining us on Sharp Money, of course, CBS sports reporter and host. And it's interesting because Geno, they had troubles in the red zone, but the Bengals' defense, Evan, which has been much maligned, constant pressure, constantly in the backfield there against Geno.
No doubt. Look, I think, and it, like most cases, I think coverage leads to pressure and vice versa. I mean, the two are so aligned. And I think in the early portion of the year, that young secondary, obviously Jeremy Bates and Von Bell, no longer in that back end. Lou Anarumo's had to lean on some young guys and inexperienced guys playing big roles. And there were some growing pains. But it seemed to click after that first drive against Seattle, to the point where I think Cam Taylor-Britt's playing at a Pro Bowl level if he keeps it up, and everybody else around him, getting Chidobe Awuzie back was key. And that allowed the guys like Trey Hendrickson and Sam Hubbard to get that extra half second, because you guys know that's all you need. If they can hold up in the back end just a little bit longer, that's all those guys need to wreak havoc, and they did. And that's what surprised me. I thought Seattle might lean a little bit more on the run game because they were – getting some good chunk yards for much of the first three quarters.
Evan, you go to Foxborough this weekend at Gillette. You've got the Bills and the Patriots. How do you assess Buffalo and Josh Allen at this point based on what transpired last year in that playoff game and where they're sitting right now in a competitive AFC?
So I'm working my way through my prep of Buffalo right now and rewatching Sunday night's game. I don't put any stock in how last year ended. That's kind of my rule now with most teams, just because as cliche as it is, I know names, and especially star names like Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs carry over, and at times coaches like Sean McDermott carry over. Each year is its own environment, and it's true. So it's hard to use last year's success or failures against the current team. But it's been, I would say, relatively up and down for Buffalo. But the reality is, when you look at them statistically and record-wise, they're still in a great position as we get ready for week 7. And I think that's where you can lean on guys that have been in this position before, Allen, Diggs, McDermott, some of the continuity, to think that, and I think Buffalo will be right there down the stretch. What concerns you mostly is the losses they've started to pile up defensively. And players and coaches never want to use injuries as excuses, but I think they are explanations, and that's a fair thing. It explains the why. And if Buffalo loses any more guys, because Milano and White and Jones up front, those are huge losses, that's going to be tough to overcome.
And Buffalo heads, Evan Washburn joining us, CBS Sports here on Sharp Money. And Buffalo heads to New England. Evan, you've been to Foxborough so many times in your career. It's going to be a completely different vibe this time, right? Because there's questions about Bill Belichick. There's questions about Mac Jones, specifically coming out of the Raiders game now. It's going to be interesting to cover because it's going to be a different feel there at Foxborough this time.
Yeah, it's a great point. It really will be. We've talked about that as a crew kind of in our preparation for this game and our early meetings. And look, I don't like doing games when one team's 1-5, 1-6, whatever it is right now. I can't think about it. But that also provides an interesting layer to the way we'll kind of see things unfold. And we're not necessarily in the business of the conversation in the week leading up as much as you guys are. And so many are. We're about what happens in between those lines for the 3 hours from 1 to 4 or however long it goes. But you need to be prepared with all the conversation in the days leading up and some of the reporting that goes around both teams, but specific to New England and what they have going on. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I've been there so many times. It's probably the place I've been to the most over the last 10 years because of how successful they've been. And this will be a relatively new experience in the sense that this is probably the worst record they've had of a New England game we've done as a crew.
Evan, you guys cover the AFC pretty frequently. You look at this Chargers team last night. Where are you on them and Justin Herbert? It just seemed like they were disjointed throughout that football game last night. Give a ton of credit to Dallas, but still, they didn't look like they were hitting their stride at all.
Agreed. I just think it feels like a broken record to some degree. And I'm speaking specific to this season, but I mentioned how years don't carry over. It is a reality that this team on the surface just looks like one that should be performing at such a higher level when it comes to consistency than this group has. And I still think it's a team that no one would want to face, largely due to who they have under center. And I do think you're seeing Kellen Moore have a real impact on Justin Herbert's development. But their inability to finish games, I think it just continues to be a reality for the Chargers. And they might go into a game here, I think it's next week, when they play Kansas City, and look like one of the best teams in the NFL. But what I've come to understand is it's competitive stamina and your ability not to have moments of greatness or moments where you look special, but to consistently perform and find ways to win games, and more importantly, not lose games. And I think for whatever reason, the Chargers have a hard time doing that this season and in previous seasons under this regime.
And we're trying, Evan, to find the teams that are legit. It's interesting. I thought Lamar and the Ravens were awesome against the Titans in London. You had the Ravens in back-to-back weeks. They went to that Cleveland defense and played awesome and then gave the game away in Pittsburgh. What did you take away from covering Baltimore?
I think Baltimore has all the components necessary to be right there down the stretch in the AFC. And I think what you saw in Pittsburgh, and you actually saw it in the Indianapolis game too at home, and they lost to the Colts, a game they had no business losing, is just a better understanding of situational football and not making mistakes that are going to lose you the game. Because when Baltimore, and you can see this, like the way they start games and when they're efficient and when they're playing well, they have all the talent necessary in all the key areas of the field to, again, be one of the best teams in the NFL. But the margin in this league, as we know, is so slim that you can't do things that beat yourself. And I think you saw that, again, in the Colts game with some of the things they did down the stretch, and then especially in the Pittsburgh game. The turnovers are one thing, but the situation of football at the end of the first half, losing, you know, you're not putting points on the board there. Those things will come back to get you. And I think if Baltimore, and maybe they have, learns those lessons in the first 5 to 6 weeks of a season, you're in a much better spot than where you are when it can end your season in November and December.
Have a great call in New England, Evan. Evan Washburn, CBS Sports. We enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, Evan Washburn on Twitter. We're coming back with Jensen Lewis, Major League Baseball postseason next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, it's time to talk to our guy Jensen Lewis here on Sharp Money. Of course, Jensen pitched for Cleveland 7-10, career ERA at 3.68. My man does a great job, and he's trying to figure out if he's going to lay it with Liberty today, a mismatch against Middle Tennessee State. However, Liberty hasn't played anybody. I know they haven't lost a game, but can they beat and cover the big number there against Middle Tennessee State? We shall find out. Jensen Lewis, of course, you can hear him on the broadcast Major League Baseball Network radio this Friday, 7 to 10 Eastern time, as we say hi to Jensen. Hi, Jensen. How are you, buddy?
Patrick, if you're out there, buddy, I can see you moving,
Jensen.
But
we got him, big guy.
Can't hear you, but good to be back with you guys. Hope all is well. And boy, what a first couple of days of not only the ALCS, but the NLCS as well.
The having some audio there on Jensen's end. I don't know if he could hear me or not, but I know he was having some difficulty there catching Patrick. But tell you what, guys, when you look at this LCS. This Texas Rangers team, Jensen, I don't know if you can quantify a team that has literally trailed for half an inning against the Orioles, give up two runs, then they come back with a five spot. That's it. Not in 63 innings, that's all they've trailed.
Yeah, it's remarkable, Amal. And, you know, I think the crazy thing about this ALCS thus far is, as you said, the kind of continuing dominance of not only, you know, the Texas Rangers offense, but it's been the early offense, too, where they've been able to get out in front and have some stellar starting pitching. I think also when you've only had to use the three relievers and Spores and Chapman and Jose Leclerc, I mean, they're in real prime position now with the off day, being able to go back, having Max Scherzer coming in at game three to start you've got Heaney probably set up for game four. And then if you really need to dig a little bit deeper, Dane Dunning can come in for Max Scherzer if he doesn't get any length there. But guys, the biggest stat for me, and this is remarkable knowing that Houston has been so good away from Minute Maid Park, being down 0-2, teams are 0-21 when they've trailed down 0-2 in LCS here in MLB history. So, you know, if the defending champs are going to get back in and defend the title, they're going to have to overcome some serious history.
Yeah, Jensen, you brought up a great point, which segues me into my next question, which is this is a team that was 39-42 at home, but 51-30 on the road. How much of a factor is that for you when you look at the rest of the series? Max Scherzer hasn't pitched in several weeks. He's coming off the shelf now with an opportunity against the Houston team. Even though they lost by the combined three runs, it feels like they're a play or two away from being really flipping the series.
Yeah, and
we lost Jensen there. We're going to get him back up and running. Issues okay. with his connection. Patrick is back, so getting things situated.
You guys got me?
Yeah.
Okay. I could see Jensen almost like pantomiming. I could see his lips moving, so maybe I could ask a question based off that, but I couldn't hear him. I could hear Amal Shaw, and boy, were those hard-hitting questions. So good job by you, Amal Shaw, picking up the slack. Hey, you know what I want? I'm going to do – I've got an echo in my ear right now here, Sean, just if we can – whenever you get a chance. Hey, Dave Dombrowski, I wanted to bring this up, Amal. He is – and I don't know if you can think of a president or general manager that immediately comes to mind that you could say, hey, this guy's better. But I think Dave Dombrowski, who is the Phillies president right now, is the greatest general manager or president in the history of Major League Baseball. Think about what Dombrowski's done. 97, he won a World Series with the Marlins. Two World Series appearances with the Tigers in 06 and 12. He then went to Boston and won a World Series in 18. And now he's in year three with the Phillies. He won the NL last year and a good opportunity this year. So that's four different teams potentially to the World Series. That's pretty impressive as far as a resume.
Oh, it's as good as it gets, right? The only person I think comparable at the executive level would be in the NBA, Jerry West. Other than that, I think he is peerless in what he's done in Major League Baseball.
Okay, let's see. I think it looks like we have Jensen back. Jensen Lewis, Major League Baseball Network Radio on Sirius XM, of course, a big friend of the show. Jensen, you got us?
All right, I got you, big guy. I was seeing you moving, too, and I could see your lips move. I couldn't hear you, so all good, big guy. Good to talk to you again.
Okay, nice to see you. I could see your lips moving, and I knew you were saying good things because that's what Jensen Lewis does. Okay, I just brought up Dave Dombrowski. I don't know if you ever worked with or he traded for you or you've run across him, but think about his success. Marlins in 97 World Series, two World Series appearances with the Tigers. They've been a disaster since he left. World Series with Boston in 18, and this is year three with the Phillies, and they won the NL last year. That's a resume that's beyond reproach.
Yeah, Patrick, to think about where he came from and knowing that he had, you know, the Yelich family behind him in Detroit and had, you know, really just a star-studded group there with that rotation of Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer in the middle of the order there with Magaly Ordóñez and Victor Martinez, Miggy Cabrera, Torii Hunter. And then to be able to move on to Boston and then also into Philly and where he's currently constructed it, you know, ironically now with the balanced schedule, we get a chance to see all those teams come in. And Philly this year was coming into Cleveland, so had a chance to talk with him very briefly. And, you know, he's a guy that's hands-on, man. He's there. He loves to see his product in person. But he's also not afraid to go make those big-time moves. And I think you go all the way back to the beginning of the season where Trey Turner was that big-ticket item. And, man, it did not look good. But there's a reason why you have your stars be able to crescendo throughout a six-month season. And the biggest key for me was getting Bryce Harper back. You go back to that point and that – kind of inflection situation where when Harper was back, it felt like that plus the billboard, which got Trey Turner to be able to relax and play, that's it. And this is a team without Rhys Hoskins right now. Think about how ridiculous this team would be if you had a healthy Rhys Hoskins contributing for the majority of the season. It's remarkable what they've been able to do. But man alive, guys, and I tweeted this out yesterday watching game one. My rookie year was 07. We got a chance to play in old Yankee Stadium there against the Yankees, and that's a 62,000 capacity there. That's the loudest road environment I'd ever played in my career, no question about it. Watching last night, and even more so kind of throughout this postseason so far, I would give Citizens Bank, the way they're going right now, a pretty good run for old Yankee Stadium's money. I mean, it's been electric beyond belief.
Jensen, it just seems like the Phillies are a different class compared to the Diamondbacks. Yes, the Diamondbacks' front two pitchers are probably slightly better when you think about what they're capable of doing, but now you lose this game last night. You've got Brandon Pfaadt potentially in game three. You've got Merrill Kelly on the bump tonight. Are they really capable of coming through in this series? It seems like it's going to be an uphill battle, even though they're only down 1-0.
Yeah, well, it might be uphill, but if there's a team that has the opportunity to kind of counterpunch the way they've been swinging the bats, I think it is Arizona. And it was very surprised yesterday, you know, with Troy Lovello not sending Corbin Carroll in the first inning, trying to create some chaos there. I think they get back to their DNA tonight. I think if they get runners on, they're going to press the issue. They're going to try and get some long innings there early from Aaron Nola. We'll find out a lot about Merrill Kelly that first time through the order too, because remember, guys, he's on a little bit of an extended rest here too, and we'll see where his fastball command and the off-speed are. If he's crisp that first time around, I think Arizona has got an opportunity. One other stat to think about, guys. Nola, I think, over a 7.5 career ERA against Arizona, one of the worst teams he's ever pitched against. And knowing that it is a must-win for Arizona, it wouldn't shock me if they kind of play with a little reckless abandon tonight to try and even up the series.
I was going to say, Jensen, I love Kelly in this spot tonight with Arizona. I mean, you're getting plus 145 at a couple of shops with Arizona. And while Nola has kind of corrected it in the postseason, I like the advantage here with Kelly. And I don't know if it's leverage that the D-backs can use, but they saw Dominguez, they saw Alvarado, they saw Kimbrel last night. Maybe look, they got three runs off of four hits. There's something to that, no?
Yeah, and their home run came from their guy at the bottom of the order in Perdomo. And so to think about that, even if you wanted to jump on him on the run line here just to kind of save face there in case it's a really close game, and it could. I mean, Patrick, you're so right to think about where Merrill Kelly and Nola are. If they're on, runs are going to be at a premium, and you feel good if you're Arizona too. I'm glad you brought it up. Alvarado had to get in, out, sit down, get back up. I doubt that Rob Thompson wants to run him out for multiple innings tonight. They got to look at Sir Anthony Dominguez. Kimbrel kind of lost it there in the ninth inning for a little bit. Arizona had the tying run to the plate in the last three innings. So, yeah, it didn't look good early, but I think they've got, with a rested bullpen pretty much, you'll probably see two innings out of Ginkle tonight. You could probably see an extension there of Saul Frank. Remember, none of the Phillies hitters saw him last night, so that's advantage. Torrey Lovello and the Diamondbacks. If Kelly kind of labors a little bit early but can minimize damage, would not be surprised if Torrey Lovello extends some of his relief corps.
Jensen, how difficult is it pitching in weather that's below 60 degrees when you get into late October and other things? Because we talk about the totals quite a bit, and generally it seems like the colder it is, the more impact it has on offenses.
Amal, not hard for us Midwestern boys. This is our home turf. And the colder it gets, the more exciting we are, man. You know, here's the difference, because the ball travels pretty well at Citizens Bank there, and how that lineup is constructed for the Phillies. Still, if you feel like you get it in the air, the ball's going to go a little bit. So I lean the under tonight. If you can get it at 8, I wouldn't mind the push there. If it's 7.5, that's hard for me to look at. But I just think last night it was a real premeditated effort by Philly to get after Zach Gallen's first good fastball. I mean, of course, you saw Schwarber the first pitch, Harper the first pitch, Castellanos going the other way early. I think Merrill Kelly makes a concerted effort to stay out of the big part of the plate. Would not be surprised if there might be an intentional walk or two, maybe one to Harper with the base open, maybe Castellanos. I mean, guy's got five homers in his last three games. So I think they pick their spots. You're probably going to put this on Alec Bohm, Bryson Stott to have to try and beat you, maybe Brandon Marsh at the bottom of the lineup.
Jensen, you're the best. I heard you and Dustin talking about it. Are you going to lay the number with Liberty tonight?
I tell you who I like even better. I like South Alabama, -17. Let's run it up there.
Southern Miss is a disaster. I agree with you. Jensen Lewis, you're the best. Major League Baseball Network Radio there on SiriusXM. Thank you. Appreciate you battling through those technical difficulties. Thanks, Jensen.
You got it, boys. Talk soon. Thank you.
Okay. Let's come back with some college football. We've got three games tonight.
This This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money, make sure you check out the betting splits over at VSIN.com. By far, our most popular tool for subscribers. You get the money and bets for every game updated every 5 minutes now, straight from DraftKings. Today's games and future events as well. Find out where the money doesn't match. Go to check out the betting splits at VSIN.com. Okay, got you back. I'm Al Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. This is Sharp Money. We're going to welcome in our buddy Tim Jenkins, quarterback trainer and film analyst. You got to check him out on YouTube. He does a great job. If you like football, you'll like Tim Jenkins breakdowns. All things QB on YouTube. Of course, the Elite Academy, T. Jenkins Elite on Twitter. And he joins us. Hi, Tim. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. What's the buzz? We were just, you know, we were having a conversation. We can start here. We were talking about Arizona, Arizona State. Those are two schools when you talk about college football that people always expect to be better just because of, well, a multitude of reasons. Let's put it that way. And then how about Colorado? There was a lot of juice there in Boulder. For those that don't know, Tim Jenkins lives in Colorado. And then what the hell was that against Stanford? You can't take an L there, Tim.
Yeah, so first and foremost, U of A ASU should be good, right? Walking around campus, it'd be hard to not get an 18-year-old dumbass to commit. You know what I mean?
Yes,
so
true.
I think the reality is if you can't recruit to U of A or ASU, we got to get you out of there. So Boulder, yeah, I mean, I think, like, listen, I think we got to give credit to Deion for the positive things, and then you also got to give him blame for you go into halftime, it kind of more or less feels like your team checks out at that point, and then you let one of the craziest comebacks happen. So my father-in-law, he's a huge wait for someone to get down and then bet on the plus 800s, right? He's like why everyone's building
yes.
casinos out
yes.
there by you guys. He is perfect. You know, you go to his win-loss, and I don't know how he stays in the positive, but he does. So I'm surprised he did not take Stanford at that point. However, he didn't, right? Fell asleep on the couch. He's snoring. And then all of a sudden, Stanford comes roaring back. I just think the reality is I'm not completely positive that CU and Deion's team are ready for that kind of spotlight yet. I think they will get there. I just think we kind of got excited about TCU and some other things that fell their way, and they're just not quite that team yet.
It's a great point you make there. This team blows a 29-point lead in case people missed it on Friday night. Let's go to a quarterback who you recently looked at. Trevor Lawrence plays on Thursday, has a knee injury. Just from your perspective as a former quarterback, how difficult is it in this 72 to 96 hour window to get ready and go play an opponent whose defense is as competitive as the Saints? And then if you're at Jacksonville, big picture wise, would you look to potentially say, hey, it'd be bad to lose a game, but if we were to rest him, we got probably a much healthier Trevor Lawrence moving forward in 10 more days.
Especially 17 game season now, yeah. Right? We're not talking, not that I guess one is that big of a deal, but we have a long season. I think you probably have to consider shutting him down for a Thursday night game. In terms of preparation, you're putting in – it's really a training camp level offense. You're hoping we have enough two-beaters, three-beaters, quarter-beaters. You want a good selection because you don't know what game plan they're going to come out for you with. You want a really good 4-to-5-play selection based on each coverage shell. And then on these short turnarounds, you'll dress them up formationally. So what I mean by that is, hey, we might run, we call it bingo, where you have the basic with the post on the same side, 12-yard in with a 12-yard post behind it. You can try to get that quarter safety to come up. We'll take the big shot. So you might put in bingo this week, but you'll put it out in out of 2x2. Hey, motion to 3x1. Hey, we're going to start in 3x1, motion to 2x2, and still run bingo to where the defense, it looks like 17 different concepts. For you, you really have a shorter install for your guys. So that way your guys can play fast. To me, Thursday night football is all about playing fast. If as a coach, you can get your guys dialed in to where they're going to go out there and play fast regardless of the game plan they face, you probably have a better shot at winning than if you're going to try to actually scheme this thing up like you would for a Sunday game. It's just not feasible. So to me, I think you limit your menu. You make sure you have beaters for coverage types. You dress them up with formation. And you tell your guys, hey, we're going to go out there and win because you're better football players than they are, right? That's really what your message has to be. and then you give them a shorter playbook to where they can play faster.
Our buddy Tim Jenkins, QB guru, trainer. Of course, he trained PJ Walker, picked up a big win at T Jenkins Elite on Twitter. Okay, so I asked them all about this. I want to ask you about it, Tim. Give me a second here. So there was an article on Friday that came out on ESPN where they asked a bunch of anonymous GMs and scouts in the NFL about Caleb Williams. And they said, Caleb Williams, he's going to make Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence look like game managers. And then one scout compared Caleb Williams' running ability to Lamar Jackson. Am I on something? Because I think Caleb Williams is going to be wonderful. First off, Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence are spectacular, specifically Burrow at this point. And then Lamar Jackson, nobody's run like him in the history of the world. What are we talking about with Caleb Williams?
We tend to do this, don't we? We get a kid that we like and we start saying stuff about him that makes him unlikable, right? Especially if,
right.
You know, I think when we were talking about Lamar Jackson, right, there was a whole, when people were like, oh, look how he runs. There's a whole group of guys my age that are like, you guys remember Michael Vick, right? Like, we sat there and it makes you not like somebody because you're kind of trashing certain guys. I think Caleb Williams is going to be a really good pro. Here's something that I do want to leave people with. There is the difference between playing I don't want to use this comparison as this is would be my comparison because I haven't done a full film study on the kid. What I will tell you is, I don't know if you guys remember Johnny Football coming out. What were the plays that you remembered? They were all the, hey, he jumps, he teabags his left guard, he spins out, he throws it against
off
Duke,
schedule.
Right? Or, hey, he throws it up in the middle of the field to Mike Evans, right? Those are the kind of plays you remembered. Caleb Williams is a little bit cut from the same cloth. Now, I think he's obviously better from the pocket than, say, Johnny. But we do have to temper our expectations a little bit when you sit there and you go, we've yet to really come across a guy that we say, hey, off schedule is how he's winning Super Bowls. You could make the argument that Mahomes is, right, that those off-schedule plays win Super Bowls. Simultaneously, it'd be a lie because we're sitting there and 85% of the time he's playing from the pocket and on time, right? So to me, Caleb Williams, we got to temper the expectations. I think he's going to obviously be a fantastic pro just on the limited stuff I've watched of him. But yeah, when you sit there and you start saying he's going to run like Lamar Jackson, I just, you know, hey, he's a former GM for a reason, right? I'm a former pro QB because I used to hit linebackers in the chest when they were playing curl flat. He's a former GM for a reason because he said Caleb Williams runs like Lamar Jackson, you know?
And by the way, I grew up, and Amal knows this, Michael Vick, I've never seen a better college quarterback. He was so exciting. But Lamar Jackson, no offense to Vic, is even on another level. I mean, would you guys agree with me? Oh. Lamar Jackson's just a different guy running the football.
Vic's straight line speed was so much fun to watch, Tim. But Lamar, you can't tackle in a phone booth.
No. I'm just old school. Like, listen, I think, you know, I'm the guy who I sit there and I fight all my young coach. You know, we have 10 locations across the country. I got 10 24-year-olds telling me LeBron James is great. And I'm like, hey, did you watch Jordan? Right? I'm just old school. I just yell at him about it. So, no, I think, Mike, I mean, obviously Lamar has done incredible things. And we also have to be honest about the level of athlete that Lamar is facing compared to Mike, right? I mean, athletes just keep getting better and better. And Lamar's making world-class athletes look stupid. And you're right, in tight spaces. It's not even like he's got the whole field to work with. So Lamar is different, which then makes the Caleb Williams thing even more ridiculous. When you watch him, you know, he more or less couldn't really run away from some gold helmets, which aren't always the most athletic guys.
By the way, Tim, I would consider firing those guys. If they're not intelligent enough to work for you or you and they think that LeBron's the greatest, that to me shows a lack of intelligence. That's just my perspective on that one. But, you know, I want to get back to Caleb.
And integrity. You can't have integrity like that on your staff, can you?
Not at all. Absolutely right. You know, you guys
can't play with them.
Yeah, it's exactly right. It's the old Mike Singletary line. Can't play with them. Can't win with them. Caleb's great, but, you know, we saw some of the criticism of C.J. Stroud coming out that Fields and Haskins in that Ryan Day system. What about the fact that when you look at Lincoln Riley, two other number one overall picks, Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, they haven't been great?
To me, the system stuff is tough because those systems work in college for a reason. They're simple. You can adjust on the fly against the covered shell, and you're going to play with so much tempo that you simplify defenses, which is the polar opposite of the NFL. no one has ever come into the league and been like, you know what, I was successful in the NFL because we played fast against simple defenses, right? It just doesn't happen. They're going to show you a million coverage shells that you've never seen before. To me, that was a little bit of a knock on Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence was one of the first guys that I said, hey, I'm going to take a look at his whole season. Go pull down the Clemson Wake Forest tape. That was the only time the kid saw any sort of rotational shell, and he struggled a little bit. And I'd make the argument that it's still something that he needs to process better, where they start in two shell snap to three, and he needs to know, hey, I've got Calvin Ridley backside one-on-one. So these are the things that I think we have to pay attention with some of these simpler systems where they've got to pay more attention to not playing fast and really actually processing the defense.
Nobody's better than Tim Jenkins talking quarterbacks or basketball. We'll talk to you next week, Tim. All things QB on Twitter, on YouTube, and at T Jenkins Elite on Twitter. We're back.